18-2129 United States v. Jones. Mr. Butcher?
Yes, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. I represent Arnold Jones, who was convicted under the Simulated Crimes Act for driving while intoxicated with his son and his minor son in the car with him. After much argument and briefing by the parties, Judge Vasquez rejected both what I requested and what the government requested, and made clear that she intended to impose a sentence that would incarcerate Mr. Jones for another 9 months. This was in July 23rd of last year. Thus, she intended Mr. Jones to be incarcerated until mid-April of this year.
Can I ask a warm-up question? And
certainly.
Maybe for the government. Why wasn't this resolved below? Why wasn't the error pointed out to the court and you and the government kind of work something out? I mean, did we need to have this appeal?
Your Honor, I will not.
I'll ask
co-counsel, opposing counsel, that we did try to. I pointed the error out that I believe the judge made a mathematical error. To be fair to Judge Vasquez, I mean, she had to weigh a lot of things because there was the tribal time that the Bureau of Prisons would not count. There'd be the good time and the tribal time, which the Bureau of Prisons would not count. Plus, trying to figure out the good time that he'd already been entitled to for the time served time, and the judge just made a factual error. When we tried to approach this, the government informed us that we were going to make the argument of why it was harmless error, and that's what brought us before this court in our request for oral argument. Because we knew by the time we filed the brief in chief that we could not work this thing out, and the government in their response brief was going to argue that it was harmless error. I hope that answers the court's questions, but I don't want to speak for counsel.
No, thank you. You can just speak for yourself.
Once again, as we're just asking for a remand for the court to correct her mathematical error. I think it's clear that's what the court did. I was trying to do the math as quickly as I could in my head at the time, did bring it to the court's attention that I think the court was off. I think the correct sentence to get to where the court wants to would have been 23 months because there would be good time on top of the 6 months over. So to get to April this year, I think a 23-month sentence was appropriate. I would note that we're just simply asking this court to remand. Everyone agrees that this sentence is allowable under the state of New Mexico law. I mean, it's not an issue whether the sentence violates the state of New Mexico statute. It does not. No one is arguing before this court that this sentence is unreasonable under 3553A. So we have a sentence that's allowable under the New Mexico law, that's reasonable under the federal law, that was just a I'm talking about the 9 more months. Everyone agrees that sentence is allowable and reasonable. We believe the court's mathematical error and given everything the court was trying to balance should not result in Mr. Jones serving another 6+ months because the court just did a mathematical error in trying to come up with what the court wanted to do.
I thought the government's argument that it wasn't allowable because there's a minimum of 6 years.
Your Honor, that's not quite the government's argument. Everyone would agree that this sentence, if Mr. Jones was not Native American and was before a state judge, everyone agrees that the state judge could impose the sentence. But the government's argument is trying to argue that somehow the state maximum sentence is really a minimum sentence, which it's not, and therefore it's not allowable. But it's that
under state law, he'd have to serve at least a third. Or sorry, he can only have a third off
that's
of
not
his 9 years.
That's not correct, Your Honor. That's absolutely not correct.
It's not correct that they're arguing that?
No, well, it's not correct that the state judge would have to do that. They're only arguing that the federal judge would have to do that, but I believe he would concede that the state judge does not have to do that. The state judge would give him probation.
Your position is that the sentence can be 0 days to 9 years, right?
Under state law, yes.
Under state law.
And the difference is that they argue that under federal law, you wouldn't be able to consider the suspension provision that's available under state law.
I believe that's their argument, yes.
Okay.
Sure.
All right. Okay. So under their argument, because you allegedly can't carry over the suspension provision, that the state court that you would be bound to have him serve 2/3 of his sentence, which is 6 years, in the absence of the flexibility that a state judge would have under that suspension provision.
Something like that. I don't mean to be flip. I don't quite understand the government's argument. There's no doubt that a state judge could impose the sentence in state court. Everyone agrees that that could happen.
Right.
And given that the Assembly of Crimes Act, that the congressional directive is they're supposed to be sentenced like they would be in state court, this idea that they want an intrastate sentencing disparity simply because my client's Native American, I think raises serious constitutional questions, among other things.
Well, don't you have to distinguish Wood for us?
What?
Wood.
Don't you have to distinguish Wood for us?
No, Your Honor. First of all, Wood dealt with an Oklahoma statute that apparently had two terms to it, like it was 2 to 4 years or something. There is no, if you read the entirety, like the state court case Claw, you're supposed to read the entirety of the New Mexico statutes together. There's no such thing as a minimum and a maximum sentence. They do not use the word maximum sentence. The basic sentence is the maximum sentence allowable by law. So they do not use the term maximum sentence. If you read in the Title 31 in the 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20s, where they talk about all this stuff, they never use the word, this is the maximum state's law. What it is saying you have a basic sentence. What everyone agrees that once you get to your basic sentence, even if there's an aggravating factor, you cannot go above it.
Why does New Mexico bother with the one-third off rule if there's no mandatory minimum?
Because it has to do...
If they can suspend all of it, why would they have a statutory provision discussing one-third at all?
Because as the court said in State v. Gomez, which we didn't cite, and I can give you the cite on remand, but on my rebuttal, but it affects... The amount of a sentence is suspended affects what can happen to the person if he violates parole or probation. So it can have a effect not on whether I can suspend the entire time, because if I suspend as a state judge 16 years and give you probation and you violate that, that's different than if I suspend 6 years and you violate probation, what you're looking at laid down the road for probation or parole. So there is a practical matter in that, but it's not... There's no such thing as when the state of New Mexico wants to have a minimum sentence, it says so. For example, the use of a gun in the habitual sentencing statute, the use of a gun increases the sentence by 1 year, and the statute makes it clear that cannot be suspended or deferred. When you have prior violent felonies, they say, yes, you enhance the sentence, and that enhancement cannot be suspended or deferred. When you have sex crimes, when it's a first class of when it's a capital offense, or when it's a first class felony, that cannot be suspended or deferred. That's New Mexico does have things that are required sentences and are very clear when they say so. This is not one of those cases.
Let me tell you what my difficulty is, and then you tell me where I'm going wrong. What I hear you saying is, Mr. Butcher, very, very well, is that the New Mexico statute does not say it's a mandatory minimum. And I don't think anybody would disagree with you about that. Those words aren't used. The question is whether or not a federal court should, under the ACA, incorporate this suspension provision. As Judge McHugh pointed out, and I don't think you quarrel with this, that the basic sentence is 9 years with the ability to reduce it to 6 years, take one-third off. Well, let me at least get my question out.
Girl.
Because if I'm wrong, I want you to explain it to me, but I at least want to tell you where my challenge lies. And so you're saying, well, all that's wrong because it could be suspended under New Mexico law. The chief asked you about Wood. Well, as I read Wood, Judge Baldock said that the guidelines eliminated suspended sentences in 1984 when the Sentencing Reform Act was adopted. And you say in your reply brief, well, but that goes out the window with Booker because the guidelines are no longer mandatory. But Booker specified two provisions that were no longer in effect. the idea that the guidelines are mandatory with regard to the range of sentences, and this doesn't fall within that. The question here is whether or not suspended sentences are continue to be available under federal law. And the second is the standards of review, and that, too, is not at play here. So it seems to me that your argument in your reply brief is wrong, that Wood continues to dictate that suspended sentences are not available, and so we cannot incorporate that part of the New Mexico statutory framework under the ACA. Now tell me where I'm wrong, and maybe at a bunch of places.
Several places, Your Honor. First of all, in Wood, the 2 years was a guideline sentence because, as the court knows, when there's a mandatory minimum, that becomes the guideline sentence. So now, post-Booker, the court can go below that 2 years. Secondly, it's not a minimum sentence. There is no state judge. The New Mexico appellate courts have made it clear that it's a maximum sentence, not a minimum sentence. The third off has nothing to do.
I'm just talking about your argument about suspended sentences.
What?
My only question was about the suspended sentences.
I know, I would say that, I know in Chapman, Judge Browning, who is on the other side of the political spectrum of Judge Vasquez, but both have a very great experiences in state court. Judge Browning was a state district judge. Judge Vasquez practiced criminal law. Both understood how the New Mexico statutes work, and to give the effect of Congress. I don't understand that when Congress wrote in the Simulated Crimes Act that the person is supposed to have the same punishment as they do in state court, how can that not be something to be considered by...
Well, what about Christie? I mean, you're saying that it has to be available because it's available in state law. Well, in Christie, long after Booker, our court specifically said that parole is not available in an ACA crime, even though it's available under state law. And so if parole is not available under Christie, even though it would have otherwise been incorporated through the ACA, why are suspended sentences able to be incorporated?
Well, once again, in this narrow issue, there was not a suspended sentence. I mean, in the sense of what Judge Vasquez did was use 3553A factors. And so part of the reason that we object to this is that this should have been litigated below, and this has not been raised for the first time in appeal. But as to the court's question is, I would say that if we do a development of the record, that whether you because from a practical standpoint, whether you suspend the sentence or you give a departure or you just give a number that's allowable under the statute, it's all the same thing. The only thing I would imagine that would be technically different under federal law would be a deferred sentence, where it would not be a conviction. Once again, Judge Browning believed that to be available, and this court in Chapman didn't say differently. I would like to reserve my last 2 minutes if possible.
You may.
Good morning, and may it please the court. How's that? Okay, very good.
I'm going to direct you right out to a question I have.
Let her introduce herself.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you did. Sorry.
Paige Messick, I represent the United States, and may it please the court. I don't know if I've already said that, but yes, your question, Judge McHugh.
You concede that you waived the six-year minimum sentence argument in the district court. I think you went beyond waiver into forfeiture. You're taking a completely opposite position on appeal than you took below. Below, you argued for a sentence of 5 years, which is below 6 years. I don't think you can come here today and argue that 6 years, for the first time on appeal, that 6 years was the mandatory minimum sentence here. I think you forfeited the argument. Tell me why I'm wrong.
I'm glad you asked that question, Judge McHugh, because we would really like a decision on the merits here, and I don't believe that we can have waived a mandatory minimum sentence. The court's case law provides...
Forfeited.
Forfeited. waiver would be worse than forfeiture for us here.
You're right.
Right.
Yeah, you conceded forfeiture. I think you waived.
Yes, we did not raise this below. Absolutely, we did not. It didn't occur to us below.
But you argued specifically for a sentence under 6 years.
So even when the government wants to waive a mandatory minimum sentence, it simply can't do that. So I'd point this court to its decision in Moyer. That was in an Armed Career Criminal Act case. Moyer. It is a 2002 decision. Under the Armed Career Criminal Act, that defendant got less than the mandatory minimum of 15 years. He appealed on some other ground. The government didn't raise on appeal that he had gotten an illegally low sentence. This court noticed that, ordered supplemental briefing. The defendant in that supplemental briefing said the government's waived this. They agreed to this lower than 15-year sentence below. And the court, sua sponte, reversed because the government can't waive a mandatory minimum sentence because a court simply doesn't have the authority to impose a sentence that's not authorized by statute. So even when the government tries to, it just can't waive a mandatory minimum. Now, I can see that we have forfeited that argument, and if we were raising this on appeal, we would be under a forfeiture standard. Forfeiture being the failure to raise it timely, but not an intentional relinquishment of a known right. We didn't know, unfortunately, that this was the state of the law. If we were to have taken a cross appeal, which we could have done here, but decided not to do, then we would be under forfeiture review, not waiver. And I would lastly point out that harmless error arguments come in all different flavors. But the argument that a district court's error is harmless is necessarily something that is raised for the first time on review. So I agree that we didn't raise this below, but I don't think that it would authorize the court to send this case back down to impose a sentence that would be illegal under this court's precedent. Now, I'd like to explain to the court a little bit how we got to this unusual position. As I have mentioned, the District of New Mexico was operating for some period of time in ignorance of the Wood decision. It might be considered blissful ignorance from some perspectives. But once it came to our attention, and it came to our attention in a totally unrelated case in district court that happened to be going on right around the same time that Arnold Jones was taking his appeal here. So having noticed Wood, we simply can't agree that there was error here and then acquiesce again below on remand to a sentence that we think would be illegal under this court's precedent. If we are wrong about Wood, and I do believe that Wood is the issue here, then we're happy to be corrected, gently, I hope. But the government just doesn't see a way around Wood.
What about Booker? We don't have mandatory guidelines anymore. Does that change the landscape enough that we would no longer prohibit the bringing over the suspension clause from the state court with the sentence when the only reason they're in federal court is because they're a Native American?
I don't believe that it does undercut Wood enough to overrule it. Wood said that the guidelines deny a court, a federal court, the authority to suspend a sentence. The guidelines denied that in the sense that they did not authorize a court to impose a suspended sentence, that there was no provision there granting that authority. And even when the guidelines are now advisory, that's still the state of affairs. There is no provision that authorizes a federal court in the guidelines or elsewhere to impose a suspension of a sentence of imprisonment that it has imposed. Wood cited, in addition to the guidelines, 3551. 3551 continues to provide support for Wood. 3551 provides that any defendant convicted of a federal crime, and then it specifically mentions defendants convicted under the assimilative provisions of the ACA and the IMCA, that any defendant convicted of a federal crime shall be sentenced in accordance with the provisions of this chapter, Chapter 227, to achieve the purposes of sentencing set forth in 3553A2. And so before and after Booker, a court was required to use the provisions of Chapter 227 to impose sentence on any defendant. Among them is the guidelines, once mandatory, now advisory. But also provided in 227 are various forms of punishment, imprisonment, fines, probation, supervised release, but not suspension, imposition, and then suspension of a sentence. Chapter 227 is the source of the sentencing options that are contained in the guidelines. And so if the guidelines denied that authority because it was absent, it is because it is absent from Chapter 227, and that is still the case. That is still the state of affairs after Booker.
So by appealing, Mr. Jones will buy himself 4 more years in prison?
No, he won't, because he won't get a... If Wood is controlling, then we don't think there should be a remand, right? So there's no situation in which he would end up worse on appeal, and that's because of the Supreme Court's decision in Greenlaw. When the government doesn't take a cross appeal, the court should not correct an error to the detriment of the defendant. We did not take a cross appeal here. You shouldn't send it back at all. The reason you shouldn't send it back is because the error that the district court committed has to be harmless in light of the illegally low sentence that he received. But you also shouldn't send it back to impose a legal sentence because the government has not sought the court to do that through a cross appeal.
And I totally understand your argument. Unquestionably, the anomaly is you're saying, judges, we want you to affirm because this is an illegal sentence. It's harmless because the sentence is illegal. And isn't that kind of strange?
It is very strange, and I hope never to be in this position again.
So, okay, you answer that. And then
yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, that is undeniable.
So, getting back to what the chief asked Mr. Butcher, so why not? I'm not asking you all to agree to this, but I just don't understand. Well, the government's position from the get-go was, well, there was a math mistake. Mr. Butcher is unquestionably right. He tried to explain it, and no fault of the district judge, but she didn't understand it. But everybody agrees it was a mistake, math mistake.
Sure.
If she double-counted the 12 months. And so you're saying, that should have been corrected. Well, why not agree to a remand and say, Judge, this was the mathematical mistake. You're not asking us to apply the 6-year or 9-year minimum. Why not agree to a remand and say, Judge, you know, just fix it. You know, you gave her 40 months. It should have been 30 months.
We just can't go in front of the district court and with sort of a wink and a nod say, well, now we know this, but we're just going to remain quiet about it. We have a duty to faithfully execute the laws as they have been interpreted by this court. And now we think that the court has said, in a case like this, the state suspension provisions are not incorporated. And so there is effectively a mandatory minimum sentence that we weren't aware of. Whether we like it or not, whether that's a sentence we would have asked for, we can't just have the court correct it. We actually have to go back in front of district court. And in that proceeding, we simply can't remain silent and acquiesce to something that we think is an illegal sentence. I wish that we had treated this case and all of these cases as if this were the state from the beginning and either made a charging decision based on our understanding of Wood, or at least proceeded as if it applied the whole time. And I regret the government's substantial contribution to the state that we're in now, but I just don't think that Mr. Jones can legally do any better on the appeal, and so the court should not send it back for that purpose.
Should we be concerned that if we didn't have someone who was a Native American here and he was sentenced for this in state court, he would be fully, that suspension clause would be fully available to him?
I understand that concern.
Certainly. It's a concern.
I would say I didn't see it, that argument developed in the briefs. So I think this is not the best place for me to respond to it. But if that is a concern, then that concern was created by Wood. And unless Wood is distinguishable, then that's already baked in.
Well, and what makes you think the guidelines, by not specifically listing suspension, intended to preclude suspension when it would be available under assimilation of a state court sentence under these unique circumstances?
I think that has to be the interpretation that Wood accepted, because if you could say by remaining silent the guidelines would authorize a suspension of a sentence, then Wood would have come out the opposite way.
Wood was in such a different context because the guidelines were mandatory. And in that case, your Native American would be treated a lot better than anyone who wasn't would be treated, because they'd have a mandatory sentence under those guidelines, and you'd have people who would be able to assimilate the suspension clause where the court would have flexibility it didn't have in any other situation. Courts now have a whole lot more flexibility in sentencing. Why wouldn't that flexibility include, in these circumstances, not just taking a piece of the state sentencing scheme? Because it does seem odd to take a piece but not the whole thing, and to take the whole sentence over, so that one of the goals of the sentencing guidelines are uniformity in sentences. This creates a situation where you are punishing people because they're Native American differently than people in the state court system that aren't. Why would we interpret the discretionary guidelines in a way that created that problem?
Well, I think because Wood interpreted the guidelines to prohibit this option, but not based on a provision of the guideline. You can't point to something in the guidelines that says a court may not suspend sentence. So it's not like there is a concrete provision that has been rendered now inoperable or advisory by Booker. It's still the same absence of authority, and 3551 still applies the same as it does before. I think the way that Judge Bacharach put it when he was explaining his concern with the argument in the reply brief is how I would express it as well. But I understand your concern also, Judge McHugh, that is a problem. It seems to be one that is dictated by Wood.
Do the other circuits go along with the Wood's reasoning? Do you know?
I haven't seen any other circuit address this sort of suspension provision. It may be something that is unique to Oklahoma and New Mexico. I don't think it exists even elsewhere in the Tenth Circuit. So I don't think there are any other circuits on that precise point. I would say, just finally to Judge McHugh's point, that if the court finds that Wood's rationale has been so substantially undermined by Booker that it's no longer good law, the government can live with that result. But we need to know the answer going forward. And if Wood is controlling, then the court should not remand. And if it is, then we agree that a remand would be in order.
Thank you, counsel. Appreciate you. You have some rebuttal time.
Yeah. Your Honor, as this court is now aware, this case goes beyond what if Mr. Jones does another 6 months or not. It raises very serious policy choices. Your Honor, there's no such thing as a mandatory minimum, and to call these basic sentences a mandatory minimum is completely incorrect, and I would ask if there's any thought about that to certify the question to the New Mexico Supreme Court.
Are you aware of any other cases that are contrary to Wood?
We believe the Ninth Circuit was, and we cited those cases in brief. But, Your Honor, the other problem, what's talking about this, is if the loop... If the government position wins, Native Americans will receive the maximum sentence for all assimilated crimes, and that simply cannot be allowable or part. It's not even the will of Congress to do that, because what the crux of the government argument is because the state of New Mexico called it a suspension versus a departure or variance. If they had called it a departure or variance, this wouldn't be an issue. But because they use the word suspension, that's cannot make such a huge policy shift. So everyone agrees that, you know, if this was somehow a guideline sentence, Judge Vasquez could go depart or vary, but he can't suspend it. That, once again, we're getting stuck on nomenclature, not on the practical reality. Once again, the basic sentence is a maximum sentence, not a minimum sentence. There are habitual acts and other acts that do have minimum sentence. This is not one of them. This is the maximum sentence. The government's taking a position that it wants everyone to receive the maximum sentence because New Mexico, when it had every right to say, we want to suspend it because how we work our parole and our probation thing, we use the word suspension because it has some issues if we screw up later versus the word depart or variance. This cannot stand in this case that the government's position is fundamentally wrong, is against the will of Congress, and leads to an interstate disparity where Native Americans will always receive the maximum sentence allowable by state law, and that cannot stand, Your Honor. I see I'm beyond my time. I don't know if the court has additional questions.
Thank you, Counsel. I think we understand your arguments. We appreciate both positions this morning. Counsel are excused, and we'll be in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:30.